Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
And good Wednesday evening to everybody, or afternoon, depending on where you're listening at in the world. Welcome to the Voice of Indie podcast, episode 31. I am your host, Beam Weeks, and with me as usual is my co-host, Stephen G. What's up, Stephen?
Hey, hey, hey. I'm excited to be here.
All right.
And thrilled to have a chance to talk to our guest today. It's been kind of a wild and hectic week for me, and I'm working my way up to tomorrow night. I'm meeting some semi-retired professional musicians so that we can see if we can get something going, something I haven't done in many years. So I'm kind of excited about that. But
jam
other
session.
Than that, Fresh Ink Group rolling along, staying busy. And we want to tell our listeners that we are monitoring and we're taking calls. So if you want to call in today, talk to our guests, talk to us, make threats, advertise your favorite, whatever. It's 516-453-9902. Just give us a call, 516-453-9902. Call anytime. You can hear the show on the phone while you're waiting for us to take your call.
Yeah, and if you don't want to call in, but you still want to participate with a question or a comment for tonight's guest, or just a question and comment in general, hashtag Fresh Ink Group. On Twitter, and if you use that hashtag, I'll see it, I'll read your comment, and make you famous. And by the way, we've already got someone using the Fresh Ink Group hashtag tonight, David Mosier. A shout out to him. He's promoting Landshark Lager, an island-style lager from Margaritaville Brewing Company of St. Louis, Missouri. So there you go. He's enjoying a cold one tonight by the sounds of it.
Yeah, thanks, David. I'm sitting here with a Mountain Dew, but that lager is actually looking a lot better than this Mountain Dew. So maybe next week we'll all have a Landshark lager sitting here while we talk.
Yeah, so why not?
When this show is over, it's going into our archives where we heartily, heartily encourage people to go have a listen, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your enemies, tell everybody that they can check out these podcasts. We're on number 31 right now. We've had a terrific slate of guests. When the show is over, we're going to be putting it over on the freshinkgroup.com website under the podcasts tab. Now, we're still making some expansions and changes and doing some things over there on the website, but the podcast part should be pretty static by now so that we can keep that updated. You can also find our shows at beamweeks.com, at stephengees.com, and especially on YouTube by going to the Fresh Ink Group channel, where we now have 109 subscribers. So we're getting a little bit closer to that 100,000 goal. Not quite there yet, but getting close. And where else can we find the show, Beam?
You can also find us on Spotify. Go to Spotify, type in Voice of Indie, all one word, Voice of Indie, all one word. And you will be able to find each and every episode that we've ever done. We're up to 31 now, so there's 31 episodes to be had.
Now, and you don't need to spend money to do that because Spotify has a free subscription service. It's kind of the lower level of the services they offer, but you can get at our podcast. So if you don't already have a Spotify account, you want to listen that way, get over there and sign up. We've also got an announcement at Fresh Ink Group. We've added another person to our staff. I've been trying to find somebody who's really a guru in the tricks and tips of all the different ways social media is being used these days so we can get into some more innovative stuff. So I spent almost a month advertising and getting solicitations from around the world and all around the United States and talked to a lot of good people who had a lot of good ideas. And I wound up going with somebody who's 16 years old. He's a social media influencer, got his own YouTube channel and way more subscribers than we have. And he's an actor who's got small parts in some feature films and things like that. And he's decided he wants to be part of the Fresh Ink Group team and show us how to get more exposure for our authors, more exposure for our books, and help us keep pushing those sales up so that everybody at Fresh Ink Group is happy as a fat lamb getting ready to take a nap. So welcome. That's Sam Wilson. He's the newest addition to the Fresh Ink Group team, and we expect to hear a lot from him.
Welcome aboard, Sam. Definitely welcome aboard. All right, tonight's guest, Forrest Robert Stepnowski, is an advocate, writer, social worker, and performance artist in the Pacific Northwest. He has been writing poetic works and prose for most of his life. He realized how important it would be to share his work with others who may have tread similar paths of self-hate, self-deprecation, and self-loathing, in hopes that they find they weren't alone. Helping others who have been deemed as different because of varying sexual orientations and identities to realize that they are not deviants, nor are they against human nature, has always been of grave importance to him. He wants this group of beautiful people to know they are part of a collective on an island where being different is embraced and accepted. Everyone has a voice, and the world would be lucky to experience them all. Forrest is a Fresh Ink Group author member. And welcome to the show, Forrest.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Hey, Forrest.
So, Forrest, first of all, let's get into some of the terminology and why you use certain terms and why you don't use other terms. We'll start with the term drag queen.
So drag queen is a reference to someone who usually female impersonation, but it can be an androgynous performer as well. Those who watch RuPaul's Drag Race, you can see a variety of different styles of drag from the androgynous to the ultra glam and stuff like that. So drag queen is someone who is an entertainer. They are someone who will perform, they'll be a spokesperson, they'll act, they'll dance, and many of us can live sing. So there's quite a variety of performances out there. There's also a group of drag queens that are celebrity impersonators, as well as people who like to refer to themselves as female illusionists to try to trick the eye of the audience and stuff like that. But it's all for the sake of entertainment, as well as a lot of them are involved with different charity groups in their local areas as well.
Okay. One of my all-time favorite movies, it's an early Louis Malle film. It's a French film. And it's Zazie Dons le Metro. Zazie rides the metro. She comes to Paris to ride the
Great
metro.
Great movie.
She comes to visit her uncle, who happens to be a female impersonator. And when she gets to Paris, her whole goal in life, at this, she's like 9 or 10 years old, is to ride the metro or ride the subway. But when she gets there, the subway is closed down. It's on strike. So she gets in there and she takes it for a ride on her own. But the uncle is a main character of this. And you get an interesting look into that whole cabaret show business of Paris of the late 50s and early 60s, because this movie was like from 1960, I believe. But yeah, that's one of my all-time favorite movies, and it was just something that came to mind as we were talking about this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And there are some drag performers who still specialize in the cabaret style of drag, which is a little bit more intimate than some of the grander shows that you see nowadays, not as mainstream. If you think of the movie Cabaret with Liza Minnelli and Joel Grey, you'll think of those people in a way where it's an intimate setting, dark room, kind of like storytelling. And that's actually what I love about doing cabaret-style drag, is the fact that we have an opportunity to tell a story and to connect the audiences that we're performing for and to be there for. Now, this is different than people who are transgendered or differently identified and who are going through transitions in their life. Most drag queens are not people who live in their persona or their alter ego. We do it simply for entertainment, and we live our lives as the person that we are in nature, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, definitely. Over on Twitter, we got a couple of comments. People are responding to what they're drinking. Best-selling author Robert Willis-Croft saying PBR here. And best-selling author Verwaine Greenhoe says Diet Coke warm out of the can. Laugh out loud. And then Verwaine adds, welcome, Sam. So see that, Sam? You've got a fan already.
Yeah. Now, using the different terminology, you don't use transvestite or cross-dresser. What's the story behind that?
All right, so that is a different type of fetish for most people, or not really a fetish, but it's a comfortability for some people who are experiencing both sides of their gender. They're not necessarily transgender. They're not necessarily gay. Some people are actually straight that do the cross-dressing route. Cross-dressing can be used more appropriately than the term transvestite. Transvestite is a term you do not hear very often anymore, and it can be deemed a little bit inappropriate or offensive to a lot of the community. But cross-dressing is someone who is outside of their work mode. They do it to relax. They do it to express themselves where they can't do that at work. But they have no desire to transition into someone. They're not one who's wanting to be a transgendered person who, you know, by identity, they're not transgendered. They are just someone who likes to dress up in both genres, and at work, they are who they are as they were born. And then there's the other part of their personality where they want to express themselves and just dress up. They're not necessarily entertainers. They're not necessarily people who were looking to be entertainers. They're just dressing up just for fun. And some people do call it a fetish as well. But I think that there's people who actually do it just for the heck of it and just for relaxation or in a form to express who they are as a person. And then you have transgender folks who are born into a body they do not belong in, for lack of a better term. They were identified as male or female when they were born. There's a lot of science behind why this is happening and stuff like that. But for these folks, they are in the process of becoming their true self. They're becoming themselves as a whole, where they have been missing a piece of who they are throughout their lives. And I bet you the audience doesn't realize that being transgender, there's a lot of people in the community who are transgendered out there that you may not even know, because their transition is who they really are. It's their true self. There's a lot of myths behind people who are transgendered. They're not confused. They're quite sane in what they're deciding on who they are. And I believe it's not really a choice for them, just like I don't believe it's a choice just to be gay or straight. For these people, it's not a choice for them to be the identity they're becoming as they transition to be their true selves.
Hmm. Wow, thank you for that. That answers a lot of questions that I've had. And I mean, I got caught up when we're trying to promote this show with what hashtags are appropriate and which ones aren't, which ones might be deemed offensive. And there's a lot of nuance in that. It's a changing times. The more people become accepting of others, I think the easier it will be for a lot of people to become accepting of themselves as well. So we're seeing our times change. So Forrest, where did you grow up? Where are
Absolutely.
You from?
Well, first half of my childhood grew up in the East Coast, Pennsylvania, New York area. You'll hear the accents about sometimes. But when I was 10, we moved to Southern California. And that's kind of where my life really evolved. In San Diego, I grew up in a town, various different towns, Poway, San Marcos, and actually in the main city of San Diego as well. My mom liked to move around. We'll just say that. But so it was a culture shock. We went from a little bit more of a higher class lifestyle when we were living in the East Coast. And then we moved to more of an impoverished area in the San Diego County area. Anyone who's listening that's from the San Diego area, I grew up in the area called Barrio Logan in East San Diego. These are a little bit more crime-driven. They were back then, at least. I have not been there in many years. But there was a lot more gangs around, and, you know, compared to where I grew up. It was not exactly, it was a culture shock, I would say. But in that experiences, I learned to find who I was. And we left a very, very desperate situation when I was 10. Grew up in a family where there was some abuse going on, dysfunction. I won't go into details because it's not about bashing my past or my abusers or my family that was involved, but it's about where I came from and the process it took me to get to the point where I became a survivor, not the blame of what happened. But I learned a lot about myself when we were free from that life where we were in constant fight or flight. And in San Diego, I also found out what depression's like and what being suicidal as a 12-year-old is like. And because of all these self-doubts I had and all this venom I had built up in me from growing up in my earlier life with the experiences that me and my sister experienced. But it came to this pact where I did attempt to kill myself a couple times. I was very fortunate that I have had a supportive family that really did help me find the help I needed. And then I met this wonderful English teacher in the seventh grade who kind of challenged me into unlocking that pain I had. And she was the one that actually got me into writing as a poet. And for those who have read Journey to the Rainbow's End, about a third to maybe almost half of the poetry in that book is actually from my junior high school and high school years. Probably not the prettiest, most grammatically correct at that time, but it's authentic. It's exactly what I was feeling at that time, and it helped me cope, and poetry actually opened up a part of me that I didn't think I had. I grew up with music all around me. I grew up with theater around me, but that writing piece was a little bit more intimate for me, and it kind of helped me rediscover who I was at that time, and has constantly helped me rediscover who I was, you know, 30, 40, almost, we won't go to the age factor here, but it's been a minute.
So then basically your writing is sort of a cathartic journey for you, so to speak.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I think for a lot of poets, we write about what's around us and we write about the personal stuff we've endured. We write what we know. It remains authentic and honest, and that some people don't always like that as well. But for me, it was definitely a therapeutic journey. And it's something that has always stayed with me for my entire life so far, including my adult life. So
that goes back to about how old were you when you started writing, you think?
The first poem I wrote was a poem called Freeze, and I was 12 years old.
12.
And it's actually in the book. It's in the Journey to the Rainbow's End.
Yes, a book that I've read, and I highly endorse. It's got a lot of not just, you know, the cathartic stuff, but the journey of discovery, that figuring out what is what and how things fit together and what direction to go from here. And I really appreciated that. When I saw that the one poem was age 12, When I was 12 years old in junior high, I had a friend that we all figured was gay, but back then it was a very terrible thing and had very terrible names attached to it and all that. And this kid got caught with his friend, you know, holding hands or kissing or something. I don't know what it was, but he got ostracized for a couple of weeks and then hanged himself. And that, I mean, it's 12 years old, and it's like, and he died, you know, because of his identity and who he was, and the fact that people thought that there was something bad about that. And that has infused me my whole life. I just have no tolerance for people who can't accept others. And it's like, if you got a problem with somebody, then get away from them, you know? So yeah, it's kind of poignant that you started writing at 12, because 12, that's about the age when a lot of people are really starting to wrestle with their identity and you know, boy, what a thing to go through.
And they people a timeline. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I started to say I want to remind listeners to call in, talk to Forrest. You know, the phone number is 516-453-9902.
And we do have a caller waiting, so you want to take this call?
Go for it.
All right. Hello, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from?
It is I, Helen.
Hello, Helen.
Hi,
Dr. Helen. Welcome to the show.
I want to ask Mr. Stepanowski, your website is very comforting. That I want to tell you to begin with.
Thank you.
So,
thank
what?
You.
How does your what? My question to you. You're welcome. My question to you is, how does your personal journey infuse or inform both your writings and your work as a social worker?
I think the journey that I share in my poetry is actually inspired to me why I became a social worker in the first place. My specialty as a social worker is geriatric mental health, and the program I run here in Washington is one of the few programs here that specializes with helping people deinstitutionalize from the mental health asylum system here, the hospital system. These are the invisible of the invisible, and as scary as it sounds when someone's coming out of a psychiatric hospital, these are also the most vulnerable because society still has a stigma against mental illness and stuff like that. I think my experiences and through my writing, being able to share that with people, I do have PTSD from my childhood and from experiences I had growing up. But I'm able to relate a lot with my residents. They have far much more comorbidities on their plate than I do. But it helps me be able to develop a program that's meeting their needs as a human being, not someone with schizophrenia and dementia, not someone who's been chronically bipolar all their life, and now they have Alzheimer's. But as a human being, the person who happened to have these diseases, but who's also a retired truck driver and served the military for many years, or the loving mom who took care of her family while struggling with mental illness and then got to the point where she was no longer able to care for herself. That helps me. It gives me gratification as well because I'm making a difference to people and their families and my staff. I'm making a huge difference to these people where they would not have had these opportunities before because there was no alternative for many of them but to be detained into a psychiatric hospital where most of them spent the rest of their lives, and unfortunately.
You sound like the most wonderful social worker I have ever come in contact with.
That's a high praise.
Thank
from
you.
Dr.
That's
Helen.
That's quite a passionate, emotional connection with one's patients. Good for you.
Thank you. Sorry, you can't touch me with that.
I'm going to read some of your poetry and your work. Okay, let me listen to what...
Thanks for calling in, Dr. Helen.
welcome.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break here and run a commercial. And when we come back, we got a couple of Twitter comments. And we're talking to Forrest Stepnowski, author of Journey to Rainbow's End and Bound.
Announcing from Fresh Ink Group by acclaimed author Stephen Gies. Fantasy Patch. Picture this. Dante Roenick creates ad campaigns, reveling in the fine art of rendering his concepts on million-dollar canvases financed by big-budget clients. Intoxicated by the sheer power of directing public opinion, he dares wage war against the conglomerate behind a worldwide antidepressant increasingly associated with sporadic violence. To juxtapose his images with reality, he enlists a mixed palette of business tycoons, his fiancé attorney, a team of corporate spy soldiers of fortune, one resurgent news anchor, and the best TV production crew in all of Chicago. But the sharp lines dividing perception from truth begin to blur when the darker motives shaping mass media come to light. Forced to re-examine the ethics of designer pharmacology, Dante is painted into a corner, his future about to be erased as patients die, clients lie, and unhealthy doses of murder prove too hard to swallow. Too late to whitewash the stain of deceit, Dante must decide who deserves to appear in his picture, the true subject, an unfinished self-portrait, way past its own deadline. It's not what you see, not what you get. Let Dante show you how. With a Fantasy Patch. Read Fantasy Patch now in print or ebook, available worldwide. Proudly published by the Fresh Ink Group.
We had a lot of fun making that video. That was one of the first book trailers we made. So get over to that YouTube channel, Fresh Ink Group, and check out the video. We've got cool special effects, animation, everything but throwing money out the screen into your lap.
We tried that, but it didn't work.
Over on Twitter, if you use the hashtag Fresh Ink Group, put a post up, we'll see it, and we can read your comments or questions on the air. Beam, you want to take Marlena, and I'll take Roberts?
Sure. Marlena, Marlena Smith, she's an author as well. She's been on the show. She says, real talk is my favorite. It takes a lot for someone to be open about what they've been through. I agree. And then to use your platforms to help and educate others is a beautiful thing. Thank you. Thankful to know you, Forrest. So there's that.
Lovely comment. And
feeling is mutual, Marlena. Absolutely.
Yeah, she's a sweetheart. And best-selling author Robert Willis-Croft says, I refuse to go through life trying not to offend anyone. I'm not purposely offensive to anyone. So if someone takes offense, that's their problem, not mine. People in today's world are far too ready to take offense. And I agree with a lot of that. A lot of people are looking for reasons to take offense. But
exactly.
I think most of my friends and acquaintances who are being marginalized because of their race or their preferences or things like that, they're not looking to be offended. I think it's the intent. It's not, you know, that you used an offensive term. It's did you say something to be derogatory or not? And it's what the person is meaning. And if someone's trying to be mean and hurtful, that's offensive. Like, you know, if that's your problem, go keep it to yourself. But there's a lot of truth and a lot of ways to look at all these.
Yeah, and like Robert
absolutely.
Says, he's not purposely trying to be offensive. If the dialogue is open, you should be ready to hear more than just one side of an issue.
Exactly.
That's what an open dialogue is.
And if, you know, if you're using terms that bother somebody, then explain why that bothers you. And, you know,
which is why I had Forrest explain the transvestite and crossdresser term that is not necessarily acceptable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we continue,
I
also want to
agree with Robert as well. That's what we're here for today. You know, that's what we're here. That's why we write. That's why we educate. That's why we speak on and advocate for others. And Robert, you're absolutely right. And I'm actually one of those few out there, and I'm sure there's going to be people who cringe that are from my community. When I say this, I think our world has gone a little too far left with politically correctness. Now, let me make sure people understand what I mean by that. Politically correctness is not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about racial slurs. We need to become anti-racist. We really do. We need to educate ourselves. But we have to be open for those conversations. We have to be open for our dialogue. So, Robert, you are absolutely correct. The fact that you're not trying to offend anybody, this is not, you're not a derogatory person from what I know about you. So one of the things that I would encourage everyone to do that, no matter what your religious belief is, no matter what your sexual orientation, what your gender identity is, what your religious beliefs are or lack thereof, you have to be able to be open and discuss your differences with people, because at the end of the day, it is our humanity that is equal far more than our differences is. We are more alike than people want to try to make us. There's enough people out there who are trying to ostracize others for being different, for being gay, for being a different race or religion and all of that. When we have these conversations, this is how we enlighten people. This is how we actually build those gaps and build those bridges to actually unite us even further. So thank you for your comment there, Robert.
We got another comment, too.
Yeah.
Verwayne Greenhost says it was good to hear from Dr. Helen. We agree, Verwayne.
Yeah, and he also said, this is for Forrest, by the way, I bought the book. So he just grabbed a copy of Journey to the Rainbow's End.
All right.
Thank you, Verwayne.
Yeah.
All right.
He's a good guy.
Now,
yep.
Now Forrest, with Dr. Helen's phone call there, you touched on being the social worker. You originally were a nurse. You had a career as a nurse.
A long time ago, yes.
Yeah, and you switched over. Tell us what led you to make that career change?
All right. So I am one of what they refer to as the last generation of what they call the nurse ratchet type nurses. We were very old school driven. You talk about this is the 90s now. This isn't like yesterday. That I'm aging myself, I know. But we were taught to treat the illness and not the resident. It wasn't a holistic approach we were really taught to me. Some programs are better than others, but that was our approach. Our focus was on the symptom and not the person. It was the broken hip in room 201 or the crazy lady who happened to have dementia. The crazy lady in 301, you know. It was a time where we were still able to legally restrain people to their beds and their wheelchairs. We could actually give them an injection to help sedate them. This is pre-resident rights and patient rights. I felt as a nurse we weren't doing enough. We were not doing enough to treat people as humans and to really delve into what's the cause of their behaviors, what is the cause of their illness in some cases, and we still have a long way to go, especially with dementia, to figure that out. But I knew I could make a difference in a different way, and other than being a drug pusher, because that's kind of how I felt back then. So I focused the rest of my career, doing looking at recreational therapy opportunities to see if that could help alleviate some of the behaviors. And then I looked at needing to do more. So I went back to school and got my social work degree in my late 20s, early 30s, and just moved forward with my career to do the same thing, which is basically what I'm doing now with my life, with my current position. But the experiences I had as a nurse, for those who love being a nurse, I love you guys. You are heroes just like we are, especially in this time with COVID. It was just not the right fit for me at that time of my life, if that makes sense. Because I wanted to deal with more psychosocial things than mental health was allowing us to do back then.
Okay.
So COVID's had a big effect on how you're doing your job right now, I assume.
Yes. Yes, so we are an inpatient long-term care setting. It is a secured lockdown, but we have a residential approach the way we deal with things. So a lot of our resources from the community, family members who want to come see their loved ones, or the guardians who are involved in the residents' lives, the patients' lives, they can't come as often, or they're restricted from coming into the settings. Actually, they're still restricted unless there's a terminal transition going on. So we have to become their families at this point. To watch the effects of COVID-19 take over someone who's already debilitated with an advanced form of dementia or Alzheimer's, and you add the comorbidity of a behavior health diagnosis or a long-term mental illness on them, to watch them deteriorate even faster is heartbreaking. And the community, the facility I work for, we lost probably about 14 residents due to COVID. Mm-hmm. We kept it out of our building as long as possible, but it was about July when we had our first round of it. And I am lucky to work with an incredible team of nurses, social workers, and care staff and administration who put the residents first. And now we're at the tail end of it, we hope. We are trying to maintain positivity that we won't have another outbreak. Most of our residents and our staff have gotten the vaccine, thank goodness. It's a scary world right now that we live in. And the thing that people don't realize is this is history repeating itself. And for those who have the concerns about wearing masks and stuff like that, I won't get too political about that. But this isn't the first time our country has been asked to wear masks. If you do your history lesson, the Spanish flu in the early 1900s, they wore a mask for almost 6 years in some places in our country.
Wow.
So this isn't a first for our country. When HIV and AIDS happened, which was actually in the 80s and 90s when it was really prolific and no one knew what the causes were and stuff like that, there was still little to known, there was still little information known to it back then. That was actually during the time I was 12 years old and looking at that community and not wanting to be part of the community, not liking who I was back then because, oh my goodness, God's trying to kill people because they happen to be gay. But HIV and AIDS was treated very similarly to how COVID is reacting to people. People thought it was respiratory at first and that it was jumping from people through respiratory droplets and stuff like that. There was a lot of isolation with them. Visitors were not welcomed. This is history repeating itself. So we need to learn from our history and really look at illness as a community, as a one community, not left side, not right side, not red, not blue, but as fellow human beings. And we need to look at illness as a means to help support each other and not tear each other down and make it, you know, separate and segregate people even more so based on those types of causes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, do what it takes to protect ourselves, but also take responsibility for protecting each other at the same time.
You know, we exactly. have another caller, if you guys want to take this call.
Just before you take it, hearkening back to the early years when Forrest was also a nurse, Verwayne Greenhoe says, oh, yes, I remember those days. I worked the ER for 27 years, and my second wife worked there as well for 14 years, but we both remember those days. I am so glad that all of that changed.
Agreed.
All right.
Agreed.
Hello, caller. Where are you calling from, and what's your name?
This is Karen Ingalls. I'm calling
Hi, Karen.
From beautiful Florida.
Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for sending
so
your
glad.
Weather up here this week.
Well, we had some good rain today, but it's still beautiful. I'll take it over the snow and cold.
Yeah, we had 70s and sunshine in Alabama, and everything here is blooming. So,
oh, good.
How beautiful.
Good. Well, I
we
just
won't
wanted
talk
to
about
say,
Washington's weather.
I am so glad to hear Forrest. I have loved every book of yours I've read, and I hope that you will write about your experiences as a social worker. What you're doing, from what you've shared, just sounds incredibly exciting. And I think the general public could learn a lot about what you're doing. And not to be afraid of people that have mental illness. As soon as you say mental, everybody's eyes get big. And they're wonderful people who have had some maybe unfortunate things happen. And they need our love and caring. So good for you for what you're doing. And, yes, I agree. I was a nurse, and there were some tough times, but I think nursing's come a long ways from what it used to be.
Yes.
So I'm going to hang up and listen to your response.
Well,
thank you for calling, Karen.
In.
Yeah.
Always good to hear from you. All right. So you want to comment?
I adore her. She is such an amazing, amazing person. Thank you for that, Karen. And thank you for the compliment about my work and my writing. I have thought about writing a book on that topic, and I still haven't worked myself up to the bravery where I could. I just want to be authentic and honest enough by writing that information out there. And if I use any past cases that I talk about to really show the humanity that's involved with these people who are suffering and struggling with these illnesses, I want to be able to do it right. So I'm definitely thinking about it. It is actually on my radar. So I will consider that. And yes, nursing has come a long way. We're no longer warehousing people. That's how I used to use the term. Nursing homes were not the beautiful sites they are now. They were pretty institutionalized. They might as well have been psych institutions in a lot of ways. So regarding that, yeah, I have thought about that. We'll see.
Okay. Now, let's change gears a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about your performance art.
Well, I am kind of semi-retired. COVID helped me come to that decision. I started when I was 13 years old. Not 13, sorry, 17 years old. Whoa, Forrest. So I started when I was 17 years old. I had a really dear friend in high school who introduced me to two local drag performers, drag queens. And I was very, very, very closeted. I was still very anti-gay in my mind, and I actually, believe it or not, was a anti-gay advocate back then. Kind of ironic how, the truth, sets you free a little bit and makes you come to a reality check. But it basically, like writing, becoming a performance artist, becoming a drag queen actually helped save my life, because I was also going back into a very dark depression, having problems with identifying as gay. I didn't really officially come out until I was 23. So it took me a while to get to that point. But these two queens, they knew I grew up in the musical theater area and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, so you dance and you sing. They wanted to play. So they got all excited. They put makeup on my face and put the beautiful fancy wig on my head and put me in one of these, the heaviest gowns I have ever worn in my life, because it was fully beaded and it was just, you had to be a bodybuilder just to hold yourself up in it. For those who don't realize, when you watch those beauty pageants or some of those drag shows and you see queens wearing heavily beaded gowns, some of them weigh 50 or 60 pounds, just saying.
Wow.
But that's where my performance started, a little bit more in that area, and I just fell in love with it. I did take a break from it a little bit in life, you know, trying to keep closeted and stuff like that, but then got back into it when I moved into Washington in 2000, and it was a good decision because I was able to be part of the community up here and help unite different issues together and help raise money for charity that was struggling. And I was able to use that platform as a means to help bring the community together. So.
Okay. Do you got something, Steven?
Yeah, let's roll one more commercial, and we'll remind everybody, hashtag Fresh Ink Group, or call in 516-453-9902. We're talking to Forrest Stepnowski. How about Slivers, B? We've been bumping that commercial the last couple of weeks.
Okay.
Fresh Ink Group presents Slivers of Life by Beam Weeks, a collection of short stories. A girl's hunger won't wait. A woman scorned takes matters into her own hands. Seeking peace by any means necessary. We pay attention when big events happen all at once, but everyday life comes at us in slivers. Two boys, a girl, and secrets in the woods. Young love falls short of the dream when the monster is someone we know. Secrets from the past mirror the tragedies of today, and a young man searches for his lost faith. Slivers of Life, a collection of short stories by Beam Weeks. Read Slivers of Life in print or ebook editions, including iBook, Kindle, Nook, and more. Slivers of Life is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
All right.
One of my all-time favorite collections of short stories.
Oh, shucks.
wonder who published that.
I'm guessing it's probably Fresh Ink Group. Hashtag Fresh Ink Group.
Yeah, so let's kick back here for this last segment, open a Landshark Lager, and start talking about your books, Forrest. You've got three books that are over on the retailer sites, places like Amazon. The first one, Journey to Rainbow's yep. End, A Drag Queen Odyssey, and then, from what I understand, a short story in there led to
yep.
My Journey to the Rainbow's End, which is also listed on places like Amazon. So,
why don't
you tell us a little bit of the story behind it? And of course, if you've got some samples, I think we'd all like to hear a poem or two, maybe.
Yeah,
absolutely. So I'll talk about the first collection, A Journey to a Rainbow's End. This was it started off as a challenge from a friend of mine who's also into writing. You guys probably know her fairly well. Who's really involved with the writing world, especially indie authors, and that's Ronnie Deshay. And she and a group of other people kept on pushing me to publish my work. They're like, no, your voice needs to be out there. People need to see what you're writing. Because I've always used my writing as, you know, the public platform on, like, social media and stuff like that, or different local organizations and stuff. But never really thought about publishing it because I thought of me publishing it. Like, ha! No one wants to hear my, read my story or anything like that. So literally 10 years later, I finally caved. And it did take literally 10 years for me to come to the determination to finally put my work out there and to get it published. And Sarah liked to admit it, in this instance, she was right. And if she's listening, she's probably laughing up a storm right now. Because I'm admitting she was right about my writing and stuff like that and how it can make a positive effect on the world.
Yeah, Ronnie's right about a lot of things.
Yeah, we disagree on a few things, but she was right about this most definitely. But the response I got from the first collection was just overwhelming. I got emails and messages on Facebook and Instagram from people all over the world, not just even our country, but all over the world. And one story that stood out to me was a young man from Germany who also grew up very religious. I grew up in a religious household, and was having problems coming to terms with his own homosexuality. And so we talked. We started talking. It started off with him getting my book off of Amazon and started just reading it, and we were talking about things and talking about my story. And what was amazing to me is that he looked at me as an example of that phrase, it gets better, that life gets better as you get older, especially when you are someone who identifies as LGBT. Pardon me there. And he actually brought to fruition what my hope was that my work would do with individuals. I just didn't imagine how broad spectrum the reach would be. You know, I figured it would be regional, maybe a few people in the country and stuff like that. Was it, you know, best-selling, you know, numbers? No. But it's enough to still make a difference, and it's still does get a positive response with people. And it does encourage people who have a different point of view on the LGBT community, or in general, even people who have different religious beliefs and stuff like that. It has started a bridge for conversations to people. And I think that was important to people to realize, you know, people who smile all the time sometimes have the biggest heartbreak. And when they read my work, especially people I went to high school with and junior high school with, when they realize some of the stuff I experienced in my life by reading my poetry and in some ways kept a lot of it secret to them, they were like, why didn't you tell us? We, you know, my goodness, you know, it's 30, 40 years later. How could we not know? You never know what someone has lived through. And I have a feeling many of us have a story that we've hidden from people in our past. So when it came to my writing, being able to reach and give this person hope, that was a feeling of accomplishment I had that I was hoping for. I didn't care if it sold 1,000 copies or anything like that. But, you know, do I wish it does? Yeah, maybe one day it will. I don't know. But when it comes to the connection it's making with people, and it's not necessarily people who are LGBT, I've had plenty of heterosexual people reach out to me too and ask questions about the community and ask questions about my own personal story of coming out and how that worked and how they changed their way of thinking about the community a little bit more and understanding and educated themselves on it more and actually become allies when they were actually against people like us, some of them very publicly before. So that's kind of why I like my first book. It's probably my favorite right now. Because of the fact that it does take people on the journey and it gives a perception to people that you don't know what someone's living through. And I imagine my story is not uncommon from others. Have I lived through a lot of different abuses and stuff like that more than some people? Yeah, sure. That's a fair statement. However, how we cope and how we survive is a different story. And I still have to work on not reverting back to that victim child that I used to be. They like to pop that, you know, ugly head sometimes. So that kind of how this collection came to fruition is, you know, taking a chance and allowing myself to be vulnerable so other people can learn from my experiences and hope that they're learning from their own at the same time.
That example you gave of reaching somebody, that's a very poignant thing for authors, especially. A lot of the people in our audience are authors, so they really understand that validation that comes from reaching people. Some people go into, they're going to write a book and they think, unless this is a bestseller, it's going to be a failure. I have to sell a million copies. And a lot of times you don't. You just need to sell enough copies to hear back from people that you made a difference, that you reached them, that what you tried to do with that book worked. And once you know that it worked with a couple of people, then, well, maybe there's a million more that are going to find it. But at least you know that what you did was something good. And that kind of feedback from people makes all the difference. So you readers out there, give your authors some feedback. Go post some reviews in places like Amazon and Barnes & Noble and let them know what a difference their words have made in your life.
Those reviews are definitely
important.
So can you share some samples with us, Forrest?
Absolutely. So I do have the first poem that started it all. It's been a long day today, I'm not going to lie. the first poem that I ever wrote, Freeze. Feeling sorry for myself. Freeze. Seeing death as a way out. Freeze. Showing scars and memory. Freeze. Feeling sharp steel against my flesh. Freeze. Drops of red coloration fall upon the ground. Freeze. Is flying past thy eyes. Freeze. Horrible memories come into mind. Freeze. Life is healing. Think. Loved ones are near. Care. Good memories appear. Care. Love is in my mind. Care. Drops of red fade away. Care. I am alive. Love. The ice has melted.
Yeah, I remember that in the book. I read that one several times. I love that.
Thank you.
You got another one handy?
I do. I actually am going to read one that's not out yet. It's going to be in my new collection, hopefully in May.
Maybe we got a world premiere.
Words.
Yes. So this the book that I'm working on currently is called Broken Beautiful. And the poem I'm going to share tonight is called Hero Song. And it's really relevant with the times right now when it comes to healthcare workers and essential workers dealing with COVID in our areas. Right now, there are healers. They travel across the lands, helping the sick and vulnerable. These heroes emotionally connect. They unite to save lives. This is their calling. Call to make a difference. Healing the isolated vulnerable, the isolated who were once revered, treasures to their loved ones and society alike, the meek fighting for their lives today. With every breath they cry, with every moment they hurt, the heroes unite, create smiles and enhance their quality of life, giving the ill comfort and compassion. The silent depend on us to give us hope, to give them light, to give them a voice when their voice is taken. Right now, they are healers. They travel across the land, helping the sick and vulnerable. These heroes emotionally connect. Right now, they are healers.
That's very poignant.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So you have another book for sale, Bound.
Yes. So Bound's a little bit of a different type of style of poetry. It is still free verse. Bound is actually kind of like an assessment in some ways of dating life, if you look at it. Even I think it doesn't matter if you're gay or straight. I think the art of dating in the past 10, 15 years, and I do blame social media for this, has decreased considerably. I think that when people lose that ability to, you know, call that person on the phone for their first date, and now we text people, or we hit them up on Facebook, or in the gay community, there's something called Grindr. I can explain, I will take another show to describe that, but it's kind of like a dating / I hate to say it, hookup site. I really do think that we have fallen away from traditional romance and what it's like to have fantasies and desires, because now all we do is hide behind a screen and, you know, have a camera facing our dates. Right now it's out of necessity, but before COVID, we were already heading this direction. So Bound, the Lost Romanticism and Eroticism of Gay Men, is about all of those fantasies. It's a review of those things. It's a challenge to our community to say, hey, where have these fantasies gone? Where have our desires gone? When did we become so fixated and addicted, for lack of a better term, to using technology as our way of being social with people? It's actually very sad, I think. You know, I'm a romantic at heart, and I'm one of those people who do need to have that special connection with somebody, and it has to be not just over a phone or on the computer, but it has to be also in person. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to have a significant other right now. Unfortunately, because of COVID, we've had to depend on technology to stay connected, because we do live apart currently. There is some distance between us right now. So, but his support has been amazing with my work schedule and everything I've been dealing with COVID at work and my writing and stuff like that. He's probably been my biggest cheerleader right now. So without him and not having that connection with him as a friend first, we probably wouldn't be where we are today without that. You know, he's an amazing person. So I know he's listening, so I'm going to make him blush a little bit. I'm sure he is a little bit right now. But literally, I don't know what I would have done to get through the coronavirus with my patients and my coworkers and my colleagues if it wasn't for him being that sounding board I could lean on, even if it wasn't in person. But yeah.
Terrific. So how has Bound been received? What kind of feedback have you been getting from that?
Well, for most people who have read it, they it's like a secret desire to them in some ways. Some people loved it very much. There were others, because of its erotic and explicit tone, that they didn't like it very much. So I think some people don't like the envelope being pushed when it comes to discussing sexuality or sex in general. And it's an uncomfortable topic for many people, just like mental illnesses. But it is part of our nature. You know, it is something that should be discussed, because when we don't discuss it, that's when people become a little bit more vulnerable and aren't willing to be authentic and true to themselves in that process.
Hmm. Yeah, and you don't want people pushed into the background either, because, you know, as you've spoken tonight, that's mentally, that's not good for people. And as Stephen mentioned, a classmate hanging themselves, that's not the answer either. The pushing away, healthy discussion, I mean, that's open dialogue. That's
absolutely
where it needs to be.
Exactly. And I think when people, and that's a hard thing for many people still, because especially in RSF and in the U.S., unfortunately, I'm not going to speak disparagingly. We have the best country in the world. I truly believe that. We have more freedoms than most people do around the country, around the world. But what bothers me is our heteronormative dialogue we push, even on TV. There's not a lot of equal representation about what community really looks like, what society really looks like, versus what we see on television or we see in stories or we see in books. And even around our social circles, we don't engage others who think or look differently than us. And that's a problem. We have to be able to unite those bridges together. We have to be able to have these open conversations so that we can heal, especially right now. We're in a place in our lives where our society is broken for many different reasons. COVID made it worse. It made it help. It didn't help at all. There are some political things going on that is a very hard situation for many people. So we have to invite these conversations openly, willingly. When we don't is when we fail as a society. Just look at what happened January 6th. And I'll get off my political soapbox after that.
Well, Forrest, this has really been an enlightening discussion. It's been fun learning a lot more about you and about your work. And I hope we've helped people in the audience think about some things and, you know, add to their perspectives and learn about other people and what we can do. How can people find you? How do they contact you? You've got a website, a blog. Where are you out there?
Twitter, Instagram.
I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on
What's your Twitter handle?
I'm on Facebook. My Twitter handle is, I think, oh, Lord, I'm on Twitter right now, too. You would think I have it memorized. at FR Stepnowski. So it's at Initial Forrest, Initial Robert Stepnowski, my last name. Stepnowski. Spelled as it sounds.
Okay.
I am on Instagram at Forrest Stepnowski. I have a Facebook artist page that's set up for my poetry as well. And I do have my own blog and website, and that's ForrestTakesAJourney.press.
Okay, and to be clear, it's the Forrest, the way the name tends to be spelled with two R's, F-O-R-R-E-S-T. Forrest Robert
Just
Stepnowski.
Like the movie.
Just like the
just
movie.
Just like the movie.
All right.
Just like the movie.
Okay,
and
thanks again.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you for joining us, Forrest. This is the second time that I've had the opportunity to interview you, to chat with you. We did that at my old show. Always an enlightening conversation.
Yeah.
I'm glad to be here with you guys. Thank you for having me.
Now, listeners, if you missed this or somebody you know has missed this, all of these episodes are in our archive, so get over there and look on freshinkgroup.com under the podcast tab, stephengees.com, same thing, podcast, and beamweeks.com, and you can also find each of these episodes usually about the day after, maybe a couple of days after, depends on how lazy I am, but they'll be on YouTube as well, and that's Fresh Ink Group. Simple enough like that. And where else can that be found, Stephen?
Spotify. Go on over to Spotify. If you don't have an account, you can open one for free and get at all of our podcasts. Now, we appreciate everybody help spreading the word. Our audience is growing each week. We send out the newsletter announcements. The clicks are going up on those. The follow-throughs are going up. And we're seeing the numbers in the various archives going up. We really appreciate all of you spreading the word and helping us get this audience to grow a little bit at a time. And if you want to get on the list to make sure that you hear the announcements to see who this week's guest is and a reminder of the show, go to freshinkgroup.com, and right on the homepage, scroll down close to the bottom, and you'll see a place to sign up for our newsletter. We don't fill your inbox with a lot of newsletters. It's every month or two at most. But then once a week, you will get an announcement telling you about the podcast and who our guest is going to be this week. Please help us spread the word, and we appreciate those of you who do.
Yeah, and that podcast announcement will always have the link to that night's show. I send those out each Wednesday morning, so the link will be in that announcement. And now next week's guest has not been solidified yet, so keep an ear out and an eye on Twitter, and you'll find out here before too long. We put the invitation out. We're still waiting to hear back from a couple of different people. But rest assured, we'll be back next week. And just want to say thank you to everybody out there, that the two callers, Karen and Dr. Helen, and also everybody on Twitter tonight, Marlena Smith, Robert G. Willis-Croft, Verwayne Greenhoe, and Verwayne, he left a message here. A couple of them I want to throw in here before we do leave. He said, just released the audio story of a woman who got caught up in a bad situation that went on for 34 years before she found a way out. Used and abused, a true story, not for the weak of heart. Life was tough, but she was tougher. And Verwayne also says, another great show. Thank you to Forrest Stepnowski and to Stephen and to me. And this is what I love. He says, the wife and I love our Wednesday night get-togethers with our friends. And we are so glad to be able to be part of that with Verwayne and his wife, Lisa. So,
well, we thoroughly enjoy it, too. And well, I guess we should give a little shout-out to David Mosier, too, with the Landshark Lager beer promotion. I'm going to have to go find that beer and try it now.
Me too.
Okay, thanks, everybody.
That sounds intriguing.
We'll see everybody next week. Thank you, Forrest. Thank you, my co-host, Beam. And
thank you. All right.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.